Let's say you get sick and you need to see a doctor. Where do you go? How much will it cost? The answer is really complicated. And at the heart of it all is health insurance, the type that you have and whether you have it. And right now, that whole system is changing for patients, for doctors, for some employers, and for insurers. There are new rules, new mandates, new penalties, new subsidies. Oh my. I'm Alana Gordon, and on today's Central Standard, we put health insurance on the operating table with local insurance experts on hand to assist with our dissection. We'll navigate this evolving, complex, and important web that is health insurance and how it affects you. Join our conversation on Central Standard right after this news. Health insurance, and whether you have it or don't, is a huge part of our healthcare experience in the U.S. It affects how care is delivered and how we get it. And the system is undergoing some major changes right now, changes that a lot of recent polls have found that a lot of us, employers, individuals, health workers, insurers, are totally confused about. From high deductibles to health exchanges, there are a lot of terms and concepts that still have to be fleshed out. This is Central Standard. I'm Alana Gordon, and today we are putting health insurance under the microscope. Joining us to sift through it all are three people who know this topic very well. Ron Rowe, who oversees individual and small group health plans at Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Kansas City. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And just really quickly, Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Kansas City, is that the same as Blue Cross of Missouri of Kansas? How does that network all work?
Not the same. There are 38 different Blue Cross plans around the United States. Some are for-profit, some are not-for-profit. We're a local not-for-profit. And we service only 32 counties in this area, 30 in the state of Missouri and 2 in Kansas, being Johnson and Wyandotte.
So. Big part of the Kansas City metro area is your plan and company.
That's right. We go up to north to the Iowa border, south down to about the Nevada, Missouri area, and then over to Sedalia.
All right. Also in studio is Jim Dawkins, who teaches healthcare at Rockhurst University. Jim, you've been in leadership roles in hospitals in the U.S. and in India and Saudi Arabia.
That's right. I decided to make a quick departure to see what healthcare was like in other parts of the world.
Well, I'm really looking forward to hearing your perspective on that. And you also teach a lot of doctors.
We do. I teach in the DO MBA program. We do it jointly with Kansas City University of Medicine and Biosciences.
And also joining us is Andy Haynes. You, Andy, you're a lawyer, and you focus on working with businesses on health plans and this whole health law, correct?
Yeah, I'm with Haynes Benefits, and we are a law firm here in Kansas City. We're an unusual law firm in that we're an employee benefits boutique. We do nothing but employee benefits, and we have 5 lawyers working in the area, and I represent carriers, service providers, and employers.
All right. So we've got a lot of expertise here at the table, and we do want to hear from you, whether you're an employer, employee, individual, what questions you might have about how insurance is working and how it might not be for you. But first, and we are going to delve into some specifics about insurance, but I really want to get to first, like, the big picture here. Because a lot of people, when they refer to Obamacare, people I've spoken with about health reform, they tell me it's really about health insurance reform. And so that would imply that health insurance is changing a lot. And so, Jim, like, big picture here, what is going on right now?
We've had different parts of the Obamacare, if you will, being brought to us since 2010. And so we've seen some of the easier parts of the reform, some different changes in the way that we'd set the benefit packages up, access to care. But now, this year, what we're doing is rolling out insurance policies to anyone. So no pre-existing conditions. People will be able to sign up for insurance on the internet. They've been doing this in some places like Massachusetts for the past several years.
Okay. So we've got some of, like, the benefits package, as in what all is part of your health insurance, what's covered. A lot of that's changing right now, or going to be changing in enrollment for next year.
Going to be changing in enrollment next year. People that might not have had the resources to buy insurance will now either be able to have a tax credit to help them offset some of the cost, or sometimes it may even be at no cost to them if their income guidelines fall below a certain level.
And so, Andy, what's changing for employers right now and businesses? Because on the one hand, I hear a lot about everything's changing, and on the other hand, I hear nothing's changing at all.
Well, actually, both are right in a sense. When this bill was passed, and I still call it PPACA, for Patient Protection Affordable Care Act, and a lot of people call it different things, and you can kind of tell what party people are part of by what they call it. But when it first passed in 2010, and when it was written before that, nothing was supposed to be implemented until 2014. As it went through the legislative process, certain provisions were moved forward to 2010 that were politically attractive. What happened in 2010, I call tweaks to the market. Most of the provisions were not that overwhelming for 2010, 2011, 2012. But where we are now is, I say, 2014 is a seismic shift. 2010, these changes were tweaks. 2014 is going to change completely the way that this is done for individuals, for small groups, for large groups, for employers, for carriers and service providers.
So this is really, this shift is like really, we're talking about right now in the fall, this coming fall, and what's going to happen in 2014.
It's going to be very unfamiliar territory. The familiarity hasn't changed a lot in the past with this, and the changes that came in, as I said, they were tweaks. They reformed things a little bit. They made some changes that were attractive to folks, but it's really next year when people are going to see it's a new world.
Ron, how are you feeling about this in the insurance industry?
Well, we're trying to maintain a calm. there's 158 days until open enrollment. I have a calendar on my desk, and that's what we're referring to. The changes take effect in January, but people can start buying their new coverage in October when the open enrollment starts. The individual and small employer, and small employer we mean less than 50 employers, they're the ones that are probably going to see the most significant changes. And they're not all bad, though. They're really not. You have some employers that are going to see their rates go down. You have some employers that are going to see their rates go up. You have individuals who couldn't get coverage that now are going to be able to get coverage. That coverage may be more expensive for some individuals, but as Jim referred to, there are subsidies and tax credits available that even though the coverage is going to be more expensive for some folks, what they're going to be paying out of their pocket may be less than they pay today. So we're trying to keep everyone calm. We can't really give specifics until probably the September time frame, because right now we're in the process of filing the new products, filing the new rates. All the carriers have to have that done by April 30th. And then HHS is not going to talk back to us until June the 6th is the date on the calendar. So we sit tight and keep wondering what's going to happen until the June 6th time frame. But on their calendar right now, the plan is that everything will be approved, ready to go by September the 4th. So we're telling people, be calm. This might be really good for you, or it might not be as good if you're focused only on how much it's going to cost you. And that seems to be what most people are wanting us to talk about today, that we really can't yet.
So you're just telling us to just be cool, just wait it out. is this going to be ready?
That's a good question. I think we get that asked all the time. Do you think this is going to get delayed? I don't think it's going to get delayed. I think the exchanges will be up and ready, that HHS will have their portal available with all the products loaded. Again, we're doing that now. What I think is going to be maybe problematic is after the fact. I think people will be able to go out, enroll in their products, select their products, and then we're going to have difficulty with the connections between the federal government and the health insurers of who just enrolled in what, who has coverage for what. Those are the pieces that the connectivity isn't there yet. But the front end, how do I get coverage? I think that's going to be ready, and that's going to happen on plan.
Jim.
Elena, one of the things that you, just to get an idea of the size of this, you've got approximately 48 million Americans that will be eligible to join the insurance programs. The amount of money that's tied into this, about $23 billion in federal subsidies will begin to flow through these exchanges in 2014. So the size and scope of this is beyond anything since when Medicare started back in the mid-60s.
That's absolutely correct, and that's one of the things we're getting ready for. And if we just take our 32 counties, there are 299,000 uninsured in the 32 counties that we service.
Can you say that again? How many?
299,000 that are uninsured. Some are eligible for Medicaid and not on Medicaid, but 299,000. Plus, we have 180,000 current customers at Blue Cross that are going to have to go through this change. Again, some good, some bad. But to put that in perspective for you, what was that, roughly 500,000, give or take? We usually do about 25,000 new applications a year. So there is a lot of work for us to do. We process 25,000 individual changes a year, and now we've got almost 500,000 we're going to process when open enrollment comes up. So, yeah, it's a big undertaking.
Alana, you asked a great question, is it going to be ready? And when you look at the exchanges, there are really two different exchanges that are supposed to kick off.
I want to also say that we are going to get into some of the specifics of these health exchanges in just a moment and whatnot. So, please.
And anyway, with the individual exchange, and this is just about the two exchanges themselves, there's no choice. It has to be up and running because there's a federal program called PSIP, Pre-Existing Condition Insurance Pool, where the funding runs out on 12/31, and we've got tens of thousands of people who have to have somewhere to go, and the exchange is going to be their only spot. Now, the other type of exchange that starts up next year is called SHOP, which is a small employer exchange, and there are delays there. HHS has come out and said that SHOP will only have one option next year instead of multiple options as designed, and that's a pretty big deal. So the individual exchanges will absolutely be up and running. Small employer changes, it's going to be there, but it's really probably something more for the future.
All right, since we've already gone there, okay, what is a health exchange, Jim?
Health exchange is internet shopping for insurance. It's probably the best way to describe it. One of the things I did when I started to research the health exchanges was I went to the first site that had done it. We'd heard that there was something called RomneyCare in Massachusetts. So you can simply go out to the Massachusetts Health Connector. It gives you an idea. I pretended I was from Boston and began shopping and was able to go through and look at all the different plans, see the rates that were out there. And had I been in Boston, I would have been able to make a choice and become insured.
So basically the idea is starting next year in Missouri and in Kansas and in states, you're going to have this place where individuals and small businesses to a lesser degree, will go and shop for health plans if they don't already have insurance through their employers.
That's correct.
Okay. I want to get into some more of the technicalities of this, but one of the things that I'm always struck just is about insurance in general. I mean, in terms of even, for example, Ron, like, why do you exist? Like, what is health insurance? Because it's like there's all these counterintuitive things about it.
You're right. And we exist because we help people finance the services that they need when they get sick. But probably the biggest change is that this is no longer insurance, okay? When the underwriting goes away, which it is. Underwriting is determining, first of all, if you're going to accept someone for coverage. Because they may have insurance. The way insurance works, and I use this analogy a lot, and people laugh, but then they actually understand it. Is to say, have you ever called State Farm right after you had an accident and say, "I need you to give me coverage for the accident I just had and fix my car"? No, you don't, because State Farm would say we don't do that. You got to get the coverage before you have the problem. Or have you ever called right after the flood and said, "I don't have flood insurance. Can you help me repair my basement because I want to buy flood insurance now"? Or more particular for health insurance is, have you ever taken your car to Goodyear and say, "My tires are really bad. I want you to replace the tires on my car because if you don't, I'm going to have an accident, and this is preventive. So send the bill over to State Farm. They want to pay for the tires because they want to prevent the accident from happening, which is going to cost them more later." That's a good example of how insurance is. You purchase things before you have the risk. So that's kind of why we exist today, to help people find ways to fund that. That goes away for the individual market with healthcare reform, because now anybody can come in and get coverage whenever they want. Underwriting can't say, well, based upon the risk that we're taking on here.
So that
this
is a really big change next year.
It is a very, very big change, and I'm not saying it's bad, but it's gonna contribute to the fact that prices are going to go up a little bit when you have to pay for things that you didn't pay in the past, and prices have to go up. So it's a major change.
Okay, so we're going to get to that major change. I want to ask a little more about that. But for those of you just tuning in, you're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 KCUR, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm Alana Gordon, and our guests today are Jim Dawkins with Rockridge University, Ron Rowe with Blue Cross Blue Shield of Kansas City, and Andy Haynes, a lawyer who specializes in health insurance, particularly for employers. This is all great because we're talking about health insurance right now. And Kansas City, we want to hear from you. Have you enrolled in a plan and then found that it didn't work for you? Why was that, and what are your concerns about next year? We'd love to hear from you. Have you join the conversation. Call 816-235-2888. Again, that's 816-235-2888, or email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. So, Ron, you talked about how costs are going to go up, and so I feel like I'm jumping all over the place because on the one hand, you know, in my outline for my conversation with you, I really want to get into some of just like the basics of insurance and kind of the differences. But since we've gone there, I really want to know, I'm hearing different messages. On the one hand, I'm hearing that next year my employer is telling me that my premiums are going to get a lot more expensive, like health insurance is going to get more expensive. And on the other hand, I'm also hearing that, wait a minute, if more people are covered, this is the whole deal, that insurance companies agreed, we'll take away that notion of, hey, we're not going to cover you because you have a health issue that's going to be expensive.
That's right.
Because we're going to have more people covered, and that's going to spread the cost. So shouldn't that make it cheaper? What is this about?
Actuarially, absolutely. And on a macro level, I want to stress that again, on a macro level, it's going to get more expensive. But at a micro level, your individual situation might be less expensive. One of the big changes is the way we rate insurance. It's called what it's going to become is modified community rating. And we could do a whole day on what modified community rating is. But that's a driver in uh-huh. what's going to change the way products are rated and the cost. So that's going to cause the cost to go up for some and the cost to go down for others. You mentioned something that you said, let's hear from some people who may have purchased a plan and it didn't work for you. That happens a lot. And I got to tell you, that is one of our biggest fears with the exchanges. We sell insurance today through three different channels. We sell it through brokers, we sell it direct if you call us, and we sell it online through a health insurance exchange that's been in existence since 1999, and we started selling on that exchange in 2000, which is called eHealth. eHealth sells almost 400 members to Blue Cross and Blue Shield each month, and it's an online system. If you look at those three different channels, our most unsatisfied customers are the people that buy on eHealth. And so when the whole idea of the exchanges came out, which is this online shopping experience, the first thing we did is said, we've got to figure out a way to engage the online shopper that's on the exchange and get a person involved with them during the purchasing process. And we have a network of 2,500 different brokers, independent brokers, that we're going to leverage to do that. Buying health insurance isn't like buying a plane ticket. It won't be like buying a plane ticket. If you go out to eHealth today, again, this is an exchange that's been in existence since 1999, and you put in your age and your zip code, you'll get 78 different products that you can choose from eHealth in Kansas mm-hmm. City, in the Kansas City market today. And if 20 of them are a $1,500 deductible plan, those 20 are none of them are anywhere close to being the same. Huh. So
there's just a lot
and I can't stress that enough, that the role of the broker or the navigator, which is coming into play, and I probably want to talk about that at some point, but they are different. People are going to need help, but there are people out there to help them. There
right.
Again, 2,500 licensed agents in the Kansas City area that are there to help.
Ron, I want to go to Jim. Jim, you're a teacher in all this.
I think one of the things that's important here, and what Ron was just alluding to, it was very much like trying to go shopping when there are 70, or you said 78 different choices, and it's apples, oranges, pears, and bananas. One of the things that the exchanges will do is give you like products. They simplify it down to four different levels. And if I
right, gold, silver, bronze.
That's correct. Platinum. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it should make it at least easier to figure out that these two different products have these prices, and we know what the benefits are, and we can compare. Before, we hadn't been able to compare, and this was one of the reasons why the broker has played such a critical role in insurance.
I want to just go – I know, Andy, you've got a thought to add, but I want to go to Pat, who's calling from Overland Park. Pat, hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Yes. My question is that, as we turn 60, my husband and I, who's self-employed and has been paying for his own insurance for several years, our insurance this year went up with Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Kansas City 30%, which was about $1,200 a month is what we're paying for the two of us, who we are both healthy. We have a $2,500 deductible, each of us, and we just, take maybe a cholesterol drug. My concern is not knowing, is it going to go up higher than this, or is this something that was kind of done with the anticipation of not being able to ask, pre-existing conditions? I guess self-employed is a real issue as far as I can see, as far as, how much you're going to have to pay for insurance.
Pat, thanks so much for your call. Ron, this is kind of your area.
I'm shaking my head because, Pat, you're absolutely right. And you're probably – and, again, you're a Blue Cross customer, so I don't want to say for sure this is what's going to happen for you. But you're probably one of those folks that's going to see your rate go down because of modified community rating. The way rating works today is the young, healthy people get lower rates, and the older folks who utilize more services have much higher rates. Modified community rating is basically going to level that out, and in doing so, and that's why it's called modified, because it's not – community rating means everybody has the same rate. Modified community rating is basically going to level that out, where the young, healthy folks are going to pay more than they do today, and the older folks who have a propensity to use more services are going to pay less than they do today. Again, macro level, Pat, I don't want to make you a promise, but in general, that's what modified community rating is going to do.
Huh. So the younger folks, Pat, does that kind of get to what you're wondering about?
Wondering, are you saying then pretty much maybe I'll get a reduction? I mean, from this $1,200, which is a lot.
It is a lot.
To pay individually a month, plus with, a $2,500 deductible. And I've had this same insurance for a while, so they have my history and how much I've used it. I guess I just, nobody's, what I've heard is that insurance companies don't really want my age group from 60 to 65. And I don't know. I don't know what your opinion on that is.
Thanks, Pat.
Well, I won't say that we don't want your age group. Just today, again, the way it's rated, that age gets charged more because there's more services. Modified community rating, again, is going to cause that, again, to level out.
What about for employers and for Andy, for employees in terms of costs and what's going to change?
Well, yeah, and it's very interesting. And it's not, by the way, just following up on the last comment, it's not just age. I have a daughter who's a type 1 diabetic.
That's right.
Carriers aren't jumping up and down when I enroll my daughter in that plan. She's expensive now, and she's going to be expensive the rest of her life, and it's just part of it. So it's not just age. There are a lot of factors that go into rating. One of the things, and talking about from the employer side, and this is something that I've been saying in a lot of my seminars for months now as we look at these exchanges, is that I think part of healthcare reform is based on the concept that the employees want to see if they can do better than their employer can in picking a product for them. I don't think that's necessarily a true foundation. And it's very interesting because the Star had an article on that this morning where it did a survey and found that, most employees think, my employer knows more about this than I do. And I'm really not as interested in this concept of, I can look at what they're offering and then I can go out and go on the exchange and see if I can get something better and I can do this calculator and find out what my subsidy is going to blah, blah, blah. I think employers are going to say, I got enough going on. And you know what? My employer has people in HR and in benefits who know more than I do. And I just know from the employers we're talking to, that's kind of the attitude that we see from most of their employees if we're doing those types of trainings.
You know, and one other thing, and as I reflect on Pat's question, is this concept of tax credits. While many times a $1,200 premium might look like a lot, there's one other piece that's going to happen. We could go all the way up to 400% of the poverty level and get a credit. That means that a household of two at 400% of the poverty level, $62,000. So you would be eligible for a subsidy or a tax credit to help you pay for your insurance. That's the one other piece. Many times I think people will go to the internet, look at the plans, and say, wow, this is expensive. I can't afford it. Then what we'll see is they need to be calculating their subsidy or their tax credit that they'll get, which will reduce their
actual cost. So this is a lot to go on to individuals now. A lot of this now is shifting from the employer to the individual. And in some ways, if you're an individual looking for insurance, there are, like you were saying, Jim, suddenly there's going to be all these potentially subsidies, depending on your income, ways to help with purchasing that coverage. But do you think that's going to be enough?
Well, I've seen studies that suggest 60% of the population would qualify for a subsidy. Uh-huh. Now, how much, it depends. I've also seen some modeling that's done by a health insurance company, not Blue Cross of Kansas City, but a sister Blue Cross plan, that their modeling suggests that people may be able to get a bronze level plan for nothing out of their pocket because the subsidy could cover the cost of a bronze level plan. Again,
but that might cover less services.
Well, maybe. In general, the majority of the people that have products with us today are not at a bronze level. They're below a bronze level.
Jim.
Okay.
And one other thing that's important, a recent report from Families USA said that of that 48 million people that are out there that are going to now be eligible, approximately 26 million of those are going to be eligible for some type of a subsidy. So a little over half of the people out there should have some type of an insurance subsidy or a tax credit.
I want to go to David really quickly before we go to a break. David, hello.
Hi. Yeah, I had a question because lately I've been getting a lot of forms from my insurance company who's basically got a big disclaimer on the back of it that says, hey, we've been around for so long and we feel like we're a grandfathered insurance that. And my assumption with that is that the new rule changes are not affecting them, and how does that affect us if they're trying to keep the old ways versus the new ways and the new rules?
So, Andy, you're the employer guy. What's that about?
I'll take a hold of that one. When healthcare reform was being debated, and actually when President Obama was first running for the White House, he said, if you like your coverage, you can keep it. And he said it repeatedly. And as the bill was being structured, some people reminded candidate Obama about that, and then President Obama, and it came up in terms of a rule called the grandfathered plan rule. And what grandfathered plan means is that if you have a plan in existence on March 23rd, 2010, which was the date that PPACA was signed into law, and you don't change that plan beyond certain very limited parameters, then you can keep that plan in place, and many of the changes required by PPACA will not apply to that plan. So it's kind of an ability for the plan to avoid some of the additional mandates, fees, and expenses that go along with healthcare reform. If the employer makes changes like pushing more cost onto the employee or raising premium or lowering co-insurance, then they lose that grandfathered status. But as long as they maintain that grandfathered status, particularly with the 2014 changes, they can, in essence, opt out of many of those changes.
Well, we're going to take a short break right now, and when we return, we'll be looking at some of the big changes that are underway for more of this for employers insurance and get into some of these specifics about what to be thinking about as we're sifting through what type of plans are out there. Central Standard returns in just a moment. Welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Alana Gordon. Our guests are Jim Dawkins with Rockhurst University, Ron Rowe with Blue Cross Blue Shield of Kansas City, and Andy Haynes, lawyer specializing in health insurance for employers, because we are talking about health insurance. Kansas City, what are you hearing about at work or in your family about health benefits and whether that might be changing this year? Are you an employer that's considering changes right now because of the health law, adding benefits, scaling back, and why? Tell us your thoughts by calling 816-235-2888 or post your comments to Facebook or Twitter. We're at KCURCST. I want to just take a step back for a minute and get into some of just the workings of health insurance as we have these conversations, as we figure out what kind of plans are out there. There's different types of health insurance. I mean, Ron, you talked a lot about individual and small group. Then you've got public and private. Like, what are these different kinds of health insurance?
Well, the public and private is primarily the funding mechanism. Who's paying for, you know, who's paying for those? The individual's paying for their own. The employer is the employer sponsoring it and contributing a big portion of it, if not all. And then and those can be, those are pub or private, if you will. And the public is the Medicare, Medicaid, those sorts of things.
And so when we think about what type of insurance we have, then there's insurance through employers, but those employer health plans differ, or how that actually works, right, Andy?
Well, they do. And in fact, within a given employer, they may have six different options for their employees to choose from. There may be a base that's similar to what we call an exchange, a bronze or silver plan, with buy-up options to go to a gold plan. There may be plans which we call consumer-driven health care, where there's a higher deductible and the employee is supposed to be looking at more from the front end. So even within a given employer, there can be a lot of differences. The health insurance marketplace is a complex beast. It always has been, and it will continue to be so.
And when we break down, what are some of the things that employers or employees, people without insurance looking for insurance, like what are some of the basic components when you look at a health insurance plan, things to take into account? I mean, I'm talking about things like what's the difference between a copay and a deductible? I mean, what are these? What are the basics of what you need to know?
Copay, co-insurance, deductible. First of all, what deductible means, that's how much you're going to pay before the health insurance plan starts paying. In general terms, you could have a $1,000 deductible. So now as the consumer, you're going to be responsible for $1,000 before Blue Cross and Blue Shield would start
paying for services. So basically, however many times a person goes to a doctor, whatever prescription drugs that costs, you pay up to that level.
And then the plan starts paying. There's some exceptions, and there are very, very many exceptions to that today. Almost all of the plans that we offer also have what you refer to as an office visit copay. So we say, if you go to the doctor, you're going to pay a $20 office visit copay or a $30 office visit copay, but we don't count that towards your deductible. Because if we did, that office visit might cost $125, and you would have to pay the $125 to reach your deductible. So that nuances, again, here and there, that why it's really important that the people that are buying and aren't familiar with that get some help. Then you have coinsurance. Well, a lot of people don't understand what the coinsurance is. You may have a $1,000 deductible with an 80% coinsurance, which means once you hit your $1,000, then the health insurance plan is going to pay 80%, but you're going to pay 20%. So a lot of people think, well, I met my deductible, I'm done. Well, not if you have coinsurance that's attached to your deductible, which the majority of PPO plans do have today.
PPO, you lost me.
Preferred. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
No. Touche.
That's good. PPO means preferred provider organizations, meaning that there's a group of hospitals, a group of doctors that you have to use in order to get the richest benefit. You can go, that's considered the network, or you can go out of network, which means you go to a provider that's not an in-network provider, is the PPO. Then you have HMO, which is health maintenance organization, which is very similar to a PPO, but the care is more directed by a PCP, a primary care physician. Here I go throwing out more acronyms. I'm sorry about that. But again, for those people that have never had health insurance, you know, the 299,000 we're talking about, they're going to be overwhelmed. And you're making a very good point. They're going to be overwhelmed. The exchanges are going to provide very little assistance in that. You're going to want to talk with someone who has done this for a long time, a broker, a navigator, depending upon who the navigator is.
And just
become.
To clarify, navigators is kind of this new role that's built into the health law that and these exchanges, where it's kind of this new program that's built in where there are people whose specific role will be to help people navigate this.
That's
web.
Right. That's right. We'll navigate the exchange, but they can't help them make the decision on which plan to buy or not, because they're not licensed folks, and you got to be licensed to go through that.
Okay. So I have two questions, but one is what to take into account when you're thinking about these plans in terms of, like, I'm wondering, like, it's obviously different for different people. But I and please, Jim or Andy, if you want to weigh in on this, but like, what are the types of things to be thinking about in terms of when you choose a plan? What works for you might goal. I mean, we talked about goals, Ron. So, but why would you choose one over the other? What are some things to think about?
Let me give you a personal example. When I was working overseas and I would travel back home to the States for a month or so at a time, I needed to have some type of insurance. I didn't want to spend a lot of money on insurance, so I ended up with a Blue Cross $11,000 deductible just to make sure that I had access to some level of catastrophic care in case something happened while I was here. Because normally, when I was in Saudi Arabia, the government paid for all of my health care there. So many times we have to look at our personal situation. What can we afford in our pocketbook? There are a lot of different pieces. That's why I think this whole conversation about the navigators and what the broker's role is in insurance. When I go to buy auto insurance, I many times will rely on a broker to help me make those decisions and make sure I'm considering all the potential risk. We have kind of the same situation starting in healthcare now.
Andy?
I just did an eight-hour presentation in Las Vegas on health, and I do a lot of eight-hour presentations for one of the groups I teach for. But I was in Las Vegas, and I am not a gambler. I have no interest in it at all. Saw some good shows, but I'm not a gambler. But when people decide what plan they want and are looking at an array of 10 options, they're placing odds.
That's yeah. Because right. you don't they're know what's going to happen to you.
Yeah, we don't know what's going to happen, but they're thinking, okay, now – you know, the kids had a rough year last year, and it wasn't as cold as it is this year, or they're getting at different ages, or they're sick or they're not. And individuals are in their own mind thinking, just like the poker players I saw, what are the odds I'm going to get sick this year? You know, if I think we're going to have a worse year than we had last year, I may want to go to a higher level plan that's going to provide more protection. And that's the thought process. So whether people know it or not, as they're making those choices, they're placing odds on their health.
You're absolutely right, Andy. And one of the
– and the carriers are doing the same thing
absolutely.
Up until next year.
Absolutely. That's right. One of the problems with our industry today is when you're getting ready to place those odds, this is a simple thing that we're addressing, and so I want to talk about it. When you're placing the odds, we have – products named things, like I just said to you, PPO, HMO, that mean nothing to you. One of the things that we did in our product development efforts, we've spent the last year and a half trying to name our products in a way that means something to the person. it's a simple little thing, but it's taken us a year and a half, a lot of focus groups, and you'll see when we roll out these new products in October that they will be named things that mean something to you now.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's a simple little thing, but rather than say PPO, there'll be things that the names will actually address the benefit designs that you're purchasing.
And again, you're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 KCUR, streaming live on kcur.org. I'm Alana Gordon, and we've been speaking with Ron Rowe with Blue Cross Blue Shield of Kansas City, Andy Haynes, a lawyer specializing in health insurance, and Jim Dawkins, a professor, assistant professor at Rockhurst University, which is all fantastic because we have a lot of questions for you about health insurance. And Kansas City, do you have questions about your health insurance and how it's changing? Please call us at 816-235-2888 or email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. We would love for you to call 816-235-2888. And as we're talking about all of this, and Ron, you're kind of referencing, well, we're reworking our plans. I am constantly trying to find what resources are available for people and for employers about all of these changes. Like, what are the places, the reliable places that you turn to for these sorts of things? What suggestions do you have?
Where
do people go?
I have to go straight to the brokers. The brokers. That is the role that they play. And a lot of people don't understand the response. They have to get licensed. They have to carry E&O, errors and omissions insurance, because they're making recommendations to people about their lives. And there's a reason that there's a licensing process and they carry E&O insurance, because they play a very, very important role. Again, I said this when we first started, and I didn't say it to try to be trite or funny, but this is not like buying an airline ticket. You will not see the online exchanges put brokers out of business the way Travelocity did travel agents. It's a totally different thing.
But I have heard these, you know, Jim, like you were saying before, part of the aim of something like a health exchange, which are these online marketplaces that states are going to be coming, you know, next year, that the idea is kind of the Travelocity to make that work. But, you know, as far as, am I eligible for these subsidies? Am I, or what about for penalties for employers? I mean, where do you, like, what suggestions do you have?
There are several that I can think of, and now speak from the employer side on this. There are a number of good organizations. I plug for one of my own groups. I happen to teach for Employee Benefit Institute of America, EBIA.com, which has a fantastic page of updates on all the changes as they go along, and we write on. We have 30 lawyers around the country that teach for EBIA. Mm-hmm. There are others that I use a lot. There are two think tanks that are on a national basis. One's liberal, one's conservative, one's a commonwealthfund.org, and the other is a heritagefoundation.org, where you can get very different viewpoints on it. I see Jim has some Kaiser printouts
over here. Yeah,
you can't
see the studio right now, but I'm being handed, like, information left and right from these guys, like, check out this premium article. And so, Jim, you have got, like, this mess of a pile in front of you.
And I'll just mention one other before I turn over to Jim, because there's another one that's absolutely free. And it's called benefitslink.com, and that's a great resource as well.
Right. And the other place, too, is simply going to the government. You can go to healthcare.gov. In their site, they have things, topics such as getting ready to enroll, with a checklist for individuals and families. For example, seven things you can get ready to do now. Things like learn about the different types of health insurance, make a list of questions you have, can I stay with my doctor? Go through and start to learn a little bit about insurance basics.
Listen. So they're actually HHS, U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, which is overseeing some of the broader changes that are happening. They actually have a whole component on their website aimed at people just trying to find out more information.
It's a wealth of information, and it's at healthcare.gov.
Well, I want to go to Buck. Thank you so much for waiting. Buck's calling from Lee's Summit. Hello.
Hello. Thank you. The question I have is it not true that if the Missouri legislature continues to persist in refusing to set these health exchanges up, and the federal government has to come in and establish them, that we're looking at potentially losing billions of dollars in subsidies?
Buck, thank you so much for that question. This is Jim. spilled a little bit of water here. But what Buck is wondering about are these health exchanges. It's a little bit interesting because there are these different ways that they can be overseen. And so actually, you know, Ron, there's federal and then there's state run.
That's right.
What is happening in Missouri?
Well, in Missouri and Kansas, they are both in the same situation. I know you have listeners on both sides of the states. The federal government will operate the exchanges in the state of Kansas and the state of Missouri. Those exchanges will be there. The whole question of will subsidies be funded if the state doesn't participate, I've heard different things about that. I have to defer to one of the policy guys.
It's actually in litigation because it's kind of a little, and this, I don't want to get too deep, but it's a little quirk in the law when it talks about the subsidies being made available for state exchanges. And there's a question of whether that's going to be a literal or more of a policy interpretation on it. And because one of the things that happened in the way PPACA was written, the state got the first option whether to run an exchange or not. And one of the problems with burdening HHS right now is that only 18 states have opted to run the state exchange. So where HHS thought they might be running a dozen or 15 exchanges, they're actually going to be running 32 exchanges. Because if the state does not opt to run the exchange, then the federal government will come in with what's called a federally facilitated exchange.
And that's so what do you know about what that's going to be like? You know, because you as an insurer, Ron, have to have your plans ready and everything.
I was sharing with the gentleman before we came on the air that HHS has demoed Health and Human Services has demoed parts of that already, and we showed that to a brokers in our April 4th meeting, the first part of it. There's a lot of talk about, it's going to be terrible, it's going to be a nightmare, it's going to be this. But Jim referenced healthcare.gov. Healthcare.gov, when the law was first passed, hired eHealth, the private exchange I talked about to put together their website where we all carriers had to file what we sell today. It is a very good website. If what HHS puts together is anything like Medicare.gov, where people use Medicare.gov to pick their Part D plans, it will be a good online system. Medicare.gov, again, is used by people, the Medicare beneficiaries, selecting what Medicare prescription plan they
again,
want.
Again, that's kind it of is the public an, insurance is, program for
it is a
seniors.
Very, very, very good site. And our hope is that the federally facilitated exchange that we're going to have to operate in Missouri and Kansas works as well as Medicare.gov does on the Part D side. If it does, the consumers have nothing to worry about.
I want to go to a question from Kathy in Leawood. Kathy, thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for covering this topic. I think it's so important. There's so much misinformation being, you know, put out there, which brings me to my question. I do have private health insurance. I have a very high deductible and spend about $6,000 a year on my premiums. Have never once actually met my deductible in 10 years, so have not had insurance cover anything that any of my medical expenses. My question is I have read that, yes, the insurance companies will have to take me. I'm 59 years old. They will have to take me, but that they won't necessarily have to cover pre-existing conditions, which is a big concern, which would leave me with the current policy that I have that really isn't serving me well.
Thanks for
I wanted to find out, you know, what the answer is on that.
Andy's shaking his head a little bit.
Well, the rule was that up until 2014, there's no pre-existing condition limitations for children under the age of 19. Starting in 2014, there will be no pre-existing condition exclusions for anybody. So the information you got, I guess, was right through 1231 of 13. But for next year, there can be no pre-existing condition exclusions for anyone.
All right. And you know, one of the things that we haven't gotten to is part of the concession for taking away the pre-existing condition clause was that there's this thing called a mandate, which I know is really popular in Missouri. And well, voters back into, you know, a few years ago really clarified that we do not want to be forced to buy health insurance. Otherwise, you're going to face a fine. What is this about?
That's right. Well, that is the area that you referenced when we first came on the air, that if everyone gets into the pool, shouldn't the rates go down? Theoretically, yes, they should, because the people that aren't in the pool today tend to be young health. If you look at the uninsured population, 60% of the uninsured are under the age of 30. Well, the law of large numbers say most of those people are healthy. So if you get them in the pool, the rate comes down. The concern that the actuaries around the United States have right now is the penalty for not having coverage is not got enough teeth in it to encourage those folks to come on into
the
pool.
What is the penalty?
The first year, it's $95. $95, or if you're a highly if you have a high income, it can be up to three times 95 or 1%, whichever is higher. So there's no way it could be more than basically $295 if you make a lot of money. If you don't, it's $95. So, and the fact that there's
$95 a month or $95 for
a year. And you don't write a check. It happens when you file your taxes at the end of the year. It gets calculated into what your return is going to be or what you owe on your taxes. So that's the biggest concern, that there's no real incentive to get the folks who are uninsured into the pool. You got a $95 penalty. The other thing you have is what we just talked about, no pre-existing conditions. So if there's no incentive for you to go and get coverage before the house catches on fire, you're going to wait till the house catches on fire.
So one of the things that we're talking about, the mandates and what individuals play, Andy, can you tell me a little bit about the employer situation in terms of like hours and in terms of how this is going to work and what you're hearing, what's happening, what you're seeing?
Well, there's some really interesting things, because within the employer sector, there's what's known as the payer-employee penalties. And they are extremely complex. When I do my teaching sessions, it takes me an hour just to go through them. So I'll
Can you just summarize it in 30 seconds, please?
Sure, of course. But basically what it means is that employers, if they have employees, if they do not offer coverage, there's a no coverage penalty. And then there's an unaffordable coverage penalty. If they do not offer coverage to their full-time employees, they'll pay a penalty of $2,000 for every full-time employee. This applies to employers that have more than 50 employees. If they offer coverage, but it's either unaffordable by certain tests that are written into the law, or it doesn't provide minimum value, which is basically a bronze level 60% plan, so if they provide coverage, but it's not good coverage, then they'll pay a penalty of $3,000 for every employee. And so employers now are very much, just like individuals, will be going on to the exchange and using the calculator to see what their subsidy will be. Every employer in the country who's paying attention right now is getting out their calculators and figuring out what their penalties might be. There's a misnomer out there that the penalty only applies if they don't provide coverage, and that's not true. The penalty applies even if they have coverage, but it's lousy coverage. One other piece of that is, and for the employers that are listening, there is a strategy going on in the market that I really should comment on. It's that employers are saying, well, if this only applies to my employees that have more than 30 hours, this is easy. I'm going to tell all my employees, you can't work more than 25 hours, and I'll get away from the penalty. Aha, there's a way around this. There's a problem, they're saying. Well, the DOL for years has overseen this on the pension side. Those rules are built into the law before health care reform, and they can use those same rules to say, aha, you're monkeying with the employer hours. That's a violation statute, and you'll still have to pay the penalty.
Well, I hate to wrap up this discussion, but I'm going to have to. Our guests today were Ron Rowe with Blue Cross Blue Shield of Kansas City. Ron, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
We're just hearing some of the interesting things going on in the employer world from Andy Haynes of Haynes Associates. Andy, thank you so much. And Jim Dawkins of Rockhurst University. Jim, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Elena. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.
You can subscribe to our podcast, hear this conversation again, or access any of our previous shows from the Central Standard page of kcur.org. Tune in tomorrow for The Movie Critics. Our show is produced by Matthew Long Middleton. Suzanne Hogan, Claire McInerney is our intern. Kim Noble is our announcer, and Bill Anderson is our executive director. Up to Date is next with the ethics professors as they return to discuss parental, governmental, and athletic supervision. I'm Alana Gordon, and this is Central Standard. Stay healthy out there.